the buzzer. McCord on its way.
Oh my goodness.
They have to get it in. There's no timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Cats and Coach G, the definitive college basketball podcast.
13 seconds. Here comes Briscoe. Briscoe veering right. Hands off to Monk. Turns. Fires the three. Good! The game is tied. 7 seconds to go. Here comes Hinson down the center of the floor. Hinson penetrates. Hands to May. 18-footer. Good! With 3/10 of a second to go. North Carolina leads.
Welcome to our Final Four preview edition of Courtside with Cats and Coach G. I'm Andy Katz along with my co-host Seth Greenberg. That call courtesy of Westwood One, the NCAA Radio Network, as Luke May sends North Carolina back to the Final Four in thrilling fashion with a game-winning jumper, 75-73 victory over Kentucky in Memphis. We got the Final Four set Saturday in Glendale, Arizona. You've got North Carolina taking on Oregon, Gonzaga taking on South Carolina. Three of the four schools that normally you don't see in the Final Four. Three coaches that have never been there before. I'm looking forward to this, getting out there on Wednesday. Seth, just an overview of the sort of the freshness, the newness of these teams that are coming to the Final Four.
Well, you think about it, three of the schools have never been to the Final Four, because I'm not including Oregon. It's been so long ago, we can't include them in the discussion.
1939.
They've been there before. So you got three schools that are new to this experience. And, is it good for college basketball? Yeah, I think it is good for college basketball. I think the journeys that these teams have taken, and also the conversation that I've been trying to talk about all season, the bottom of leagues have caught the middle of leagues. And those teams in the middle are good enough to beat anyone, and they're bad enough to lose to anyone. But having your team committed together, having a unique style of play, and having different players step up in that moment in time, really, it's been phenomenal to watch. Each coach with a different journey. Mark Few, a lifer at Gonzaga. Frank Martin, a high school assistant at Miami, a head coach at North Miami High School. Goes back to Miami High, wins state championships. An assistant at Northeastern through Bob Huggins then at Cincinnati, to having his own job, and the job he's done has been incredible. Dana Altman, a former junior college coach, who then was mentored by Lon Kruger and, took programs at Marshall for a year and then Creighton, and obviously going all the way to the West Coast and doing what he's been able to do. So three different journeys, three great stories. The storylines for the Final Four will be terrific, but in the end, you've got four teams, four veteran teams, four teams that the narrative as the start of the season was about the freshmen. The end of the season, it's about the teams.
Yeah, a lot to unpack here. I mean, first of all, even though South Carolina, for example, comes in as the real outlier, after watching them in person again over the weekend, the way they defend, the fact they've got a big-time talent in Sindarius Thornwell, there's no reason that they're not a team that can't win two games in Arizona. How much do you look into this? And there are favorites, obviously, that legitimately all four of these teams could win the title.
Carolina's probably the favorite from the experience standpoint. They've been there. They've got a core group back. But South Carolina, they imposed a will on the game. They make it hard for you to enter offense if you're Gonzaga. They deny ball reversal. They rebound the ball on the offensive end. They make you react to them. They could win.
They beat Duke.
I mean, Oregon, you could vary, even without Boucher. I mean, the way Dorsey's shooting the ball, 24 points a game, 62% from the field, 59 from the three, making big shots. Brooks is a tough matchup. They don't turn it over. The matchup zone is an equalizer. You can figure out a reason for them to win. Gonzaga, very easy to see a scenario they can win. They got experience in those transfers. They have athleticism and versatility in their front court. Karnowski is different. Nigel Williams-Goss is playing at an elite level. You can easily find and create a scenario and spin it if you want to that they're going to win. Unfortunately, we're going to have to make picks, and then when we're wrong, people say we know nothing.
Well, we'll wait till Friday to make our picks. We'll give us some time. Let's just look back on the weekend real quick here, Seth. First, obviously, the game that we teased at the top here, North Carolina versus Kentucky. I know you've talked a lot about it on SportsCenter, but I just want to hear from you. Just the sort of the end game situation on both sides. From your vantage point, how you saw it playing out, in the way in which, especially Monk, the way he hit that shot, where just, throughout the course of the season, he just shot ready. I always hear you say that. I mean, he was just ready to make a play. And then conversely, on the other end, no timeout, just go down. And Luke May is, once again, in position. He's going to take the shot, and he makes it. What do you think of the way both sides handled that sort of frenetic end game?
Well, I mean, the five-second call was almost mind-boggling to me. That set up the first three-point shot. And you know, you can't be in a position where, was it the first or the second, where you can't get the ball inbounds. Having Kennedy Meeks inbounds the ball was the reason. He's not a great free-throw shooter, so you wanted him as the inbounder. He's big. He can see over any pressure. Malik Monk making those back-to-back shots. The second one was really good execution. It was dribble handoff to ball screen, created enough separation. Monk jumped up, made a big-time shot. Where was Monk earlier than that? That was the most aggressive he was the whole game. Now, the officials guarded him in the first half. The officials impacted the game in the first half in a big way. It was the game in the first half was officiated so differently than any other games in the NCAA tournament on both sides. But Roy Williams pushing it after Monk makes that shot, that's who they are. That's how they play. All right, 7 seconds less, they're going to push it. Think about Carolina basketball. You think about transition basketball. All right, so what they stay true to their identity. The one thing that goes unnoticed, it's not just the shot, it's the pass. And Theo Pinson having the poise to make that pass, just like Ryan Archidiakono, had the poise not to try to be the hero, but to make the right play. And attacking in transition, advantage, disadvantage, making a good decision. May running wide. May was terrific in that basketball game. He thought he was running to get to the glass. He saw the dribble penetration. He spaced out. He was shot ready. Big time shot. So, I mean, that the best execution in the game was at the end of the game. I thought Roy Williams' defensive game plan was great, going under the ball screens, keeping Fox in front, defending Monk with length with Justin Jackson, two really good decisions, and then going zone when they were down five with Willis out of the game was huge. Two or three possessions, got him out in transition, got him a chance to score some easy baskets. Willis comes back in the game. What does Roy Williams do? He goes back man-to-man. So I thought those were just interesting things as a coach looking at the game.
As a coach, how much did you love the fact that at this point in the season, Luke May, who people probably hadn't heard of earlier in the year, is the one that is ready to contribute at a high level this past weekend?
He's good.
Isaac Humphries for Kentucky made big plays.
Because they played him too big. Well, Isaac Humphries was good, and I'm excited for him. Carolina plays two bigs. SEC, there's not a lot of teams that play two bigs. When you play two bigs, it forced John's hands a little bit to play Humphries and Bam at the four. And he delivered.
But as a coach, how much you love when a guy's ready to in the season?
You're proud. That's why the season is a journey. Luke May's been good for a while, though.
Beginning of the year, he wasn't someone that was talked about as much. You know,
well, he's still not talked about as much because when you talk about Carolina, you talk about Justin Jackson. You talk about Meeks rebounding the ball, which he did an incredible job. You talk about Joel Berry.
Theo Benson
coming back and being a bigger defender. So, I mean, he's kind of down the food chain a little bit when you talk about Carolina. He's kind of high in the food chain, probably walking around campus today, though.
All right, quick bow on Kentucky. How do you sum up their season?
You know, do we have the sound of those two kids? Can you play that for a second?
Everybody talked about, you know, how we looked like we didn't care. And, you know, this isn't the locker room. I look like the guys don't care. I love my brothers, man. The shot just playing back and forth in my head is going to be difficult to get over, but I know I got to. You just got to tip our hats off to North Carolina. They played a great game, and everybody talked about how young we were and that we weren't going to make it this far. You know, we won the SEC regular season championship. We won the tournament championship, but we're looking for bigger things. You know, we were winning games, coming in here looking like, you know, nothing happened. And that just showed that we had bigger goals and, you know, getting to where we were. But it was a great season. And I love these guys. I'm not thinking about what's happening next.
Bam Adebayo, De'Aaron Fox, that's as raw as it gets. But for all the cynics that say, well, you know, Kentucky guys, they're only there for 7 months. They're not invested in the program. They don't care about each other. All they care about is getting to the NBA. How wrong they are. John Calipari creates a culture. He creates a family. Those kids will be Kentucky Wildcats for life, whether they leave this year, next year, or lottery picks, or are drafted in the second round, whatever happens. That's what's the biggest misunderstanding about what Cal's doing, that you can be in a place for 7 months, 9 months, and you can feel like a family, and that the environment that he creates with his team, and all the cynics have no understanding of the investment these kids make, the sacrifices they make. Yeah, they're going to make a bunch of money. But while they're there, in that moment of time, they know they're not walking through that door again. And it's something pretty special to be a Kentucky Wildcat and what they've experienced and what their shared experience has been. And I think it's underappreciated, the family environment that John creates. And people just don't understand that it hurts. And it hurts to have that shared experience and not reach a goal. And will they be fine tomorrow day? Yeah, they'll be fine. But what you heard from the Aaron and Bam, and if you got a chance to see it, it's real. And I don't think people can appreciate what John's been able to do, even in this one-and-done culture.
And I will just say this, two quick things. One, we see that in the NBA because the Kentucky guys stick together in the NBA. And when John was inducted into the Hall of Fame, all those players came back, and a lot of them only played for one season. And you could see the loyalty to John and to each other. Gonzaga's victory over Xavier was as impressive an Elite Eight victory as we've seen. What stood out for you?
Well, how good they are defensively. I mean, how imposing they are defensively. And, you know, everyone watched Xavier defend and play changing defenses, the zone especially. And people struggle. Arizona struggled. And the execution of Gonzaga, their ability to pass the ball. All their threes were inside-out threes. Post-touch, boom, pitch it out. Their pit guys can really pass the ball. And then on the other end, the job they did on Trayvon Blewett. I mean, Trayvon Blewett came into that game playing about as well as anyone. I think he's averaged about 24, 25 points a game. And to make it hard for him to get an easy catch, to deny and disrupt the rhythm of Xavier, who, you know, Chris Mack did a phenomenal job. How good Gonzaga really is. And I think that's underappreciated, just how good this team is and how together they are. And they've got the three transfers that give them a toughness and a maturity and an experience that at the highest level, past just playing in the West Coast Conference. They got the McDonald's All-Americans, and Nigel Williams-Goss, and obviously Collins. They've got versatility in their lineup. And Mark, you know, to see him accomplish that, we got, like I said, the storylines, whether it's Mark, the career Gonzaga lifer, or Frank Martin, a great American story, success story, I should say. Pretty cool.
Oregon over Kansas. Watching that game, I mean, you had the feeling like, as we said before, there were men out there. I mean, Jordan Bell was phenomenal inside. Dylan Brooks, Tyler Dorsey making big-time shots. And they just took it to Kansas in Kansas City. What was your impression of what the Ducks did?
Well, Jordan Bell was terrific. I mean, they don't have to run a play for him, yet he impacts the game. His defensive versatility is amazing. My first thought, end game, is Frank Mason, what an incredible career. What an incredible career. My second thought is people are talking about Bill Self being unsuccessful, losing in the Elite Eight. It's almost a joke.
And I don't even know who these people are.
It shows the ignorance of
he could be in the Hall of Fame next week.
Yeah, it's just ignorance. It's ignorance. And he overachieved with that team. They had two guards that basically no one wanted.
One of their bigs was hurt all year.
All right, they lose Udoka Azubuike. Landon Lucas is a great role player, but that's all he is, a role player. He changed his system completely to fit his personnel, and he was a game away from the Final Four and probably played their worst game. But Oregon, on the other hand, Dorsey's been phenomenal. Dana Altman, without Boucher, really didn't change anything except it impacted their bench. But
helped Jordan Bell.
But Williams has given them 15 good minutes a game, averaged 6 rebounds a game in their last 2 games, which has been huge. And Tyler Dorsey and Dylan Brooks are finishers. And then the complementary guys, whether it's Dylan Ennis, who, you know, when Jackson had 2 fouls at the end of the first half, they ISO him, he gets to the rack, he finishes. That's a big-time play. Pritchard and Benson sharing that point guard position, not turning it over, taking what the defense gives him, moving the ball, moving people, defending. Dana Altman, you know, another guy that's just done an incredible job with his team. And, you know, they're 40 minutes away from playing for a championship.
And lastly, South Carolina's comeback against Florida. Sundarius Thornwell, you know, was phenomenal in the way he did that.
But their bigs were phenomenal. Yeah. Their front court, Andy, I mean, they got 20 points besides Thornwell out of their front court. And then how about Thornwell scores once in transition, gets fouled, because he always gets fouled, then drives it in transition,
passes it back out, fails the defense,
and he pitches it back out.
To Kotzer.
Yeah. What a great decision. And that just shows you a team that has trust and plays for the good of the group. That play was underappreciated, but that play was a perfect reflection of what playing for the good of the group, and that he did not make the wrong. It's very similar to what Theo Pinson did. Those were two plays that the passer made the right choice and could have very easily been selfish and just tried to make a play on their own.
And I will just say this. Mike White at Florida did a phenomenal job with this group. Got better throughout the course of the season. They're going to continue to have great success at Florida. Great hire by former AD Jeremy Fuller.
And just a classy, terrific coach. Not a young coach. I hate when we say, well, he's a good young coach. No, you're a coach.
Right.
Young, old, middle age, I don't care. You either coach or you can't coach. And he can really coach. And that was best reflected by the play they made at the end of the Wisconsin game. No timeouts. They got right into their set. They took away Casey Hill, was probably the first option because of his speed. They go to Cheese. Cheese makes the shot. He could have missed the shot. But them being prepared for that moment was huge.
When we come back here on Courtside, we'll be joined by new Indiana head coach Archie Miller. But first, all this month, we're asking you to tell a friend about a podcast they love. Right now, think of a friend, your mom, anyone you care about. What podcast would they really love? Got it? Now do it. Tell them about it in real life or on social media. And if they don't know about podcasts, show them how. I know I've had to do that with my mom. Tell us what you recommend with the hashtag Tripod, T-R-Y pod. Thanks for spreading the word.
And now joining us here on the Shell Pinzola Performance Line on Courtside with Cats and Coach G, new Indiana coach Archie Miller. Archie, how does that sound?
It's almost, it doesn't make sense to me, you know, to be honest with you. It's I'm sitting in Assembly Hall right now looking over the top of the balcony, and just, I'm in awe of all the players that have been in here and the former coaches, all the managers, everybody. It's just, you know, you're one of the proudest basketball programs in all of college basketball. And, you know, then now that I'm in charge of it, you know, I have to take great responsibility and doing things the right way, but hopefully, you know, building something special.
Archie, the timeline of how this occurred, once Tom Crean was let go, obviously there was a lot of buzz and everyone assumed it would be Steve Alford from UCLA. And the athletic director, Fred Glass, made it clear you were the only candidate he said that he talked to. So if you can help us sort of the timeline, once Tom was let go, when did you find out about your chances to potentially get this job?
Well, I'm not sure in terms of the timeline of when it all started or finished. I just know when I had my first conversation with Fred on the telephone, and I was very excited to have an opportunity to talk to him on the telephone. The first school that I've ever talked to, you know, being a Dayton, it's the first one I ever answered the call. So I knew it was a powerful place. But the conversation with Fred was something I was very comfortable with. We had a very clear message back and forth on everything. It wasn't anything that either of us wasn't looking at each other and saying, boy, that's off kilter. We were very in line with one another in terms of what he thought, what I thought. And, you know, when we were able to sit down face to face, it became more clear that he's a very genuine person. And he has a genuine passion for Indiana University and his basketball program. And that's all I was looking for. And, you know, I think, you know, at the end of the day, me being named the head coach here was something that I didn't anticipate as the season ended. But I will tell you this, I'm very, very honored to be here.
Arch, you've been pursued by a lot of big-time programs over the last few years because you've done an incredible job at Dayton. What made Indiana different?
Well, you know, Seth, the family I come from, it's basketball 24/7 since I've been 6 years old. I mean, and, you know, when you're in that environment your whole life and you love the game, you know, the way that we do and, you know, the ability to, you know, coach at a basketball school is something that I've always thought was important. You know, Dayton is a basketball school. It's why it was so successful. The fans, the passion for it, the administration, they're all going in the right direction, trying to help you. And, you know, this to me is one of the ultimate basketball programs where, you know, you're the center point, you're the focus, and with that comes great responsibility, but also great advantages, you know, and playing in front of, you know, 18,000 people and the brand of the state of Indiana. There's just so many advantages that go in with that. You have to be able to do it, but, to me, if I was ever going to leave Dayton, I was never going to leave Dayton unless I felt I was at a place that loved basketball and at the same time, you know, aspired to be, you know, what we all do, Final Four caliber program every year.
So you take over this position, you walk into your office today, you're the head basketball coach at Indiana. If in your mind, what are the two or three most important things you want to get accomplished in, like, say, the first 10 days? Like, what are the most important things you feel you have to do to take ownership in this program?
Well, I think you know as well as I do, Seth, nothing is more important than your players. Like I told them the first time I had a chance to talk to them, you know, I didn't recruit any of you, but you are mine. And that's my job right now, is to take hold of the team, the individual conversations, their families, you know, the individual meetings together, you know, walking onto, you know, the campus together. I just have to spend an abnormal amount of time with our current players and also our incoming recruits and signees. You know, that is the most important thing that I can do right now with my time. And as much as you probably want to try and do everything, I know this from being in the first stop, you can't. And I know it right now, the most important thing that I can do is deal with our current players. Nothing's more important.
Archie, your brother at Arizona has been highly successful, but he wasn't an Arizona guy. And there was obviously a segment of people at Indiana that wanted an Indiana guy. What can you learn from the way your brother handled it at Arizona that maybe you could apply to your situation at Indiana?
Well, I think Sean's biggest advice, and I was there early at Arizona when it wasn't the Arizona that it is right now, is that people will respect the way that we run our programs. You know, great fan bases, knowledgeable fan bases, you know, former players, decades worth of former players. They want to see how you're going to run your program. They want to see if you're going to do it the right way. And I think that's what Sean's biggest gift was early. You know, he didn't go out there and try to win everybody over. He concentrated on very quickly. He was going to deal as a coach. He was going to run the program the way he needed to run it to become a championship caliber program again. And in the meantime, spend an abnormal amount of time investing in the former players, obviously developing your current players, and then recruiting, you know, like a madman. And I think over the course of time, the productivity, the product on the floor, you know, the genuineness, that there's a real relationship guy, a real guy that's actually trying to do everything in his power to make everybody a part of it. And, you know, that's what I watched. And I think, you know, this place is the same. And, you know, the facilities are way better than they were at Arizona when we got there. And, you know, the locker room is much better, and in reality, Tom Crean is a terrific coach, and I wasn't here, but I know how hard he works, so I know I'm in an environment right now that's better. We just have to try to keep our feet on the ground, work at it every day. We have a plan. We know we got to do, and I think at that point, everybody just wants to be part of a successful program.
You guys have – how many guys do you expect to have returning, and how many kids did they sign early, and – in recruiting, what are you going to try to add? Are you going to try to stay status quo? Are you going to try to add to this group? What do you think your most important needs are? As obviously, it's been such a short period of time as you look at your roster and look at your team.
It's been a short period of time, and now that I have my 2 feet on the campus, this is when you start finding out what the guys are thinking. You know, I think we have a couple guys on our team that have aspirations to the NBA, and exploring their options is something that I help them. You know, more than happy to help them do. I also – you know, want them to know that they have a coach here that really wants them to be a part of what we're doing on the first step of the new era. And I think, you know, the other guys on the team are probably looking at me saying, you know, I wonder if he has plans for me. So I have to make sure they understand how much value they have in my mind and get that going. The incoming kids, they have 3 signees, and I've already been on the phone with those guys, you know, trying to make sure that they understand that, you know, there's a new coach, but Indiana is still Indiana. This is a terrific place. It's terrific education. You're in front of the best fans in many ways in college basketball. So I think we have to just work very hard to keep our things intact. And then as things happen or things fall through or you have opportunity to cash in on, you'll look to maybe make yourself better if you can. But the one thing I want to do is, especially early, it's not about adding bodies. It's not about doing anything crazy. It's about making sure we start to get this current group, you know, with their 2 feet on the ground feeling good. And then from there, starting to execute the plan, you know, in the short term and long term, which to me really starts in the state of Indiana.
I know when there's a coaching change, it's so difficult for everyone. And obviously the coaching community is such a small community. And you mentioned Tom's name, and Are you going to try to find some time to kind of just reach out to him and visit with him, or is that something that's just too difficult?
No, I would love to. You know, Coach Crane, I would love to. You know, Coach Crane recruited me when I was 15 or 16 years old. He was an assistant at Pittsburgh, and, you know, my dad would bring me up to Pitt, and we'd be working out and practicing with AAU teams, and Coach Crane, you know, had a you know, one of those guys. You know how it is, Coach, when you have a great recruiter, you know, whether you go to a school or not, you always remember the guy. I always remembered him. And through my early coaching career and all the way through, I've always had a lot of respect for him. He's an extremely hard worker. He's, you know, just a talented coach. And, you know, I haven't been here. It's not my place to comment on what happened here or whatnot. But I would love to reach out to him. I'm going to try. I've obviously tried to send some messages out, and definitely want to give him a ring for sure. And I hope he knows that, you know, my staff, my players, what we're doing here doesn't have one bad word to say about Coach Crane. It doesn't have anything. It has to do with nothing but positive.
Archie, before we let you go, I'm curious, what are you leaving behind at Dayton?
Well, you know, I think we're leaving behind a tremendous group of kids that believe in winning. I think that we're leaving an incredible administration that literally would walk side by side with you through fire, you know, good and bad. Leaving probably one of the more genuine, you know, caring communities that I've ever been in. And it's hard to leave places like that. You know, you know as well as I do, Coach Greenberg knows that when you have something good and it's going well, you know, it's hard to leave that stuff because you spend a lot of time. And to me, we're leaving a lot of great people. That's the biggest thing.
Congratulations, Archie.
Thanks, Andy.
Archie, congratulations, man. You're going to do great. You're going to enjoy it.
Thanks,
you're
Coach.
Your environment. It. And please tell your dad to say hello.
I'll do that. Yeah, thanks. See you guys. I look forward to seeing you again soon.
So, Seth, we know this is one of the highest profile jobs in the country. It certainly is one of the most discussed jobs in the country by its fan base, by its alums. You've got recruiting guys who follow the head coach in the summer to see who they're recruiting. So there's a lot of scrutiny. How do you think Archie Miller will handle that?
He's got a tremendous pedigree. He's extremely poised. He's passionate about the game. He's a very good communicator. He's got a tremendous support system, and it sounds silly, in his brother, who's lived that same type of transition. He's not following a legend, per se, and neither did Sean, because obviously Coach Olson was removed. But the legacy of Bob Knight still hangs over the Indiana program. And I think the lessons learned from Sean will help them. I know they're so close, and he's going to do a great job. His first job is to get into the state of Indiana, become relevant in your geographic footprint, and then build from there in recruiting. And he's right on the money. Earn the trust of your players, because they're your players now, no matter who recruited them. And he understands that, and I think he'll work real hard at that.
You know, I think it's really unique, as I was mentioning, Arizona, not an Arizona guy. Sean's doing great. I agree with you. I think Archie will do great at Indiana, not an Indiana guy. You know, there's going to be other openings that are going to pop at some point in the next, whatever, 5 years. At some point, Syracuse, Duke, North Carolina. I mean, how critical is it to have a guy, to, you know, lack of a better term, from that family tree?
It all depends on the job, and it all depends on the pool of candidates. Is there a guy out there that is the right fit in that moment in time? And, you know, Steve Alford's at UCLA. You know, is he the right fit at that moment in time? You know, who's the next guy in line for Duke? Is it Coach Capel, who's right there beside Coach K? You know, if Chris Collins continues to have success, is it him? Is it Woj? I mean, there, you know, you never know, because the right guy changes each and every year, depending on where that program is and what the people that could be the next in line who are part of that school's legacy are doing. So in a perfect world, would you like a guy that's probably from your institution, if he's the right guy in that moment in time? And I think it's different for every institution.
Well, that brings me to my final question, Seth. Georgetown, real unique situation. It's the highest profile opening at this juncture. And you've got, do you go in the family tree and try to lure Patrick Ewing and see if he's interested, the assistant with the Charlotte Hornets? Or do you go outside the family tree and make a clean break from the highly successful Thompson era?
I think it's really difficult. I think that like, to me, Tommy Amaker would be a guy that could bridge that gap. He's a terrific communicator. He's from that Northern Virginia, you know, Maryland, metro, you know, D.C. area. He's got a tremendous background in history, whether it's cutting his teeth at Seton Hall or Michigan or what he's been able to accomplish at Harvard. More importantly, I think he could be neutral. He could walk in and, let's face it, whoever gets that job, you're not going to have Big John on your side, but you surely don't need him against you. And I think that
a great point.
A guy like Tommy Amaker, I think he could bridge that gap. It's not like Coach Thompson's going to be going out and speaking on your behalf, but you sure don't want anything in the other direction. Pat would obviously be a home run, but Pat would have to understand what the job entails. And the job entails, it's basically 24/7, 7 days a week, 12 months a year. It's not just recruiting, it's fundraising, it's mentoring, it's academic support, it's compliance, it's practice coaching, it's game coaching, it's, you know, there's so many, the business of college basketball is so exhausting and very much a different business than the business of the NBA. And, you know, how quickly a guy like Patrick could transition would be the question. Could he put together the right staff? So, Patrick, the coaching part, the teaching part, Patrick, look, he'd have no problem. Look at his pedigree. Look at the people he's worked for. But the business of college basketball would be a culture shock to him just because it's changed a lot through the years, even if his son was one of his assistants.
And here they come, folks. Here they come.
It's time for you to storm the podcast. Let's hear from the student section.
All right, Andy. Seth had to go do some more Sports Center duties. He's the busiest man in entertainment right now.
Yes, I know.
But that's okay.
Milk
because,
it for all it's worth.
Yeah, he doesn't particularly like court stormings anyway, so it'll just be you and I here for the student section.
Well, he fancies himself the chairman of the storming.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. But who needs him?
That's
who
right.
needs him? We don't. But we do need Scott Mooney. He's at Scott Drop and Roll, and he uses the hashtag student section to ask, with what some have called a down year, will the rule change allowing players to return to school after the NBA Combine help increase the level of play?
Okay, sorry, Scott. Down year? I'm sorry. I just totally disagree. I think scoring was up. We had more high-scoring games than I can remember from covering the sport, you know, for 20... Geez, I've lost count.
Don't date
27
yourself.
Years,
yeah.
Whatever it's been. So scoring's up. I feel like we've had plenty of entertaining games in a lot of high-profile conferences. Great freshman class. The teams that are in the Final Four are all basically veteran teams. So I don't see that part of your question being relevant. But the back part, I do think, on the NBA Combine, I think it has helped. There's no question it's helped. Justin Jackson, Caleb Swanigan, these guys would have been gone. Nigel Hayes, under the old rule, if they had to just declare and that was it and couldn't test, and that was just the previous year, because last year was the first year of this, we'd have a completely different season this season. So I love the fact that the NCAA and the NBA got together and at least amended that to where the NBA encouraged the NCAA to allow it. The NBA changed their policy where now, you know, you can go to the combine, you can get workouts, and the NCAA said you don't have to let us know that you're coming back to college until late May. And it's been a huge boon for college basketball this season because there are a number of players that I think just would have taken the bait and stayed in the draft, making a quick decision in early April.
Next one from Drew Allen at The Drew Abides. Obviously, Andy, we saw some really cool tournament games in really cool venues this year, including the East Regional semis and final at Madison Square Garden. But Drew wants to know, what's your favorite venue to cover a tournament game, and which venue should host more tournament games?
Well, I was in, as you mentioned, I was in Madison Square Garden this past weekend. I think it's phenomenal. I mean, I love going to the Garden because obviously it lives up to its billing as the mecca of college basketball. And obviously basketball in general, been unbelievable sporting events there. I was blown away by the fact that you had two SEC teams on Sunday, neither one named Kentucky, and the place was packed. It was loud. South Carolina fans came loud and proud. Florida had a good contingent. And that game could have been, you know, in Atlanta or wherever, but it was in Madison Square Garden. It was great. I wasn't there Friday night because I was in studio, but everyone that was there told me it was phenomenal with the buzzer beater with Florida beating Wisconsin. So I think New York needs to be in the regular rotation on a consistent basis. I was told on Sunday that it will be, and they're going to award the next round of sites in April from, I think it's 19 to 22. I think for the East Regional, it should essentially be rotated among Madison Square Garden. I'll give you Wells Fargo Arena. I was there last year. I thought that was very good in Philadelphia. It's going to be in Boston next year, and I've been there before for the regional. I thought it was pretty good, so I'll give you that one. I want to see it again, though. And then I'll go D.C. I've been there in D.C. a couple times when it's been there. I think it should be those four eastern cities for the East region. It makes the most sense. You know, out west, you know, I'd like to see it consistently be in a rotation of being in L.A. You know, obviously San Jose's got a good facility. You know, in the Midwest, Kansas City brings it. So I think that's obviously a consistent rotation of being a host. And then, you know, I've been in Memphis before. I wasn't there this weekend. Obviously, the fan base has helped with that one, so it looked pretty phenomenal. But I think there are other ones that they can certainly float around in different parts of the country. But, you know, not to show an East Coast bias, but I just think that Madison Square Garden has to be in the rotation.
And finally, Andy, we have this question coming to us from Sean Iske. He's at Sean Iske. We just heard Coach Greenberg talking about the head coaching vacancies at Indiana and Georgetown. Well, not vacancies anymore at Indiana, I guess. But Sean wants to know what happens at Syracuse now that top assistant Mike Hopkins is at Washington. Who do they look to as being Boeheim's successor now?
Well, this gets to the whole thing. Do you stay in the family? And I think there was an assumption that they would, because they obviously made that assumption by making it on paper with Mike Hopkins as the head coach designate. He left for Washington. But I think Indiana has turned the page on that, where there was a real push to obviously hire Steve Alford in some segments of the Indiana populace. They didn't do it. They went outside the family yet again with Archie Miller. And I think we all agree that it'll be a solid, sound hire for Indiana. So if Syracuse stays in the family and Mike Hopkins is not the guy, let's assume that he's going to stay out in Washington through the time that Jim Boeheim retires, whenever that is. You know, is it Jerry McNamara? Is it Adrian Autry, who are on the staff? If it's not one of those two guys, then it's completely wide open. It clearly is a very good basketball job because it's got an unbelievably passionate fan base. They've been able to recruit to Northern New York for decades. The style works. Now, whether or not the same guy would do the same style, who knows? But, you know, basketball at Syracuse is an institution. It has really become the face of the university. So I think it would work with whoever is there, and you would assume that it will be part of the family, which would be one of the two guys that I just mentioned that are on the staff. But if not, it'd be a pretty interesting hire for John Wildhack, who used to be our boss here at ESPN.
Keep those questions coming. Use the hashtag student section, and make sure you get those questions into us for Friday's Final Four preview. We're going to have a bonus episode of the podcast coming at you on Friday with a complete breakdown of the Final Four, Andy.
And then on Monday, Josh,
yes,
we will break down the national championship game. So we'll have two podcasts originating from Phoenix. You'll be here. We'll be warm. But it'll be Friday and Monday for me and Seth to break down the Final Four and then the national championship game. And Josh, for those that still don't know where to find these podcasts, where can they?
They can find them any number of places, Andy, including iTunes. But most importantly, they can use the ESPN app to subscribe and get alerts every single time we publish a new show. Using the ESPN app, clicking on the Listen tab within that app, and subscribing to our podcast is probably the most effective way to get our podcast.
All right, so that'll wrap up this Final Four preview edition on a Monday of Courtside with Katz and Coach G. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at ESPN Andy Katz. And you can follow Seth on Twitter at Seth on Hoops. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Courtside with Cats and Coach G. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts. Courtside with Cats and Coach G.